In this episode of Startups for the Rest of Us, Mike and I talk about building a local versus a remote team, and we also weigh in on what I think is the ideal way to build a startup team. This is Startups for the Rest of Us, episode 326. Welcome to Startups for the Rest of Us, the podcast that helps developers, designers, and entrepreneurs be awesome at building, launching, and growing software products, whether you've built your first product or you're just thinking about it. I'm Rob.
And I'm Mike.
And we're here to share our experiences to help you avoid the same mistakes we've made. So where this week, Mike?
Well, there's a little bit of snow on the ground. And fortunately for me, next week, I'm headed out to Big Snow Tiny Conf in Vermont. So I'll be headed up there with a guy named Jeremy from Forecastly. And then there's about a dozen other people who will be meeting us up there, and a couple of days of skiing and masterminds during the evenings, and should be a lot of fun.
Sounds great. And who puts that one together? Is that the one that Brian Castle puts together?
Yeah, so it's Brian Castle of Audience Ops and Brad Tenard of Delicious Brains. So the two of them put that together, and they also have like a couple of sister conferences, I'll say. One of them is in Colorado, and that one is mostly put together by Dave Rodenbaugh, but Brian and Brad are involved in that. And then there's also Big Snow Tiny Conf in Europe, which is done by Craig Hewitt. Brad, I believe went to that one. That was last month, but the two in the U.S. are actually being held at this during the same week.
Sounds like fun. And you've gone to at least one in the past, haven't you?
Yeah, I think I've gone to two so far. This is the fourth one. So this will make my third.
That's cool.
Cool. What about you?
Well, I'm also off to a conference next week. I'm repping Drip and Lead Pages at Saster in San Francisco. So Jason Lemkin's Saster has grown up to, I think it was 5,000 attendees last year, and it's supposed to be more than that this year. So it's quite an event and not something that I've ever gone to purely because of that. Like, you know how we built MicroConf into the conference we wanted to attend? A 5,000 person conference is not a conference I like to attend. I just don't love big groups of people. But I've heard a lot of good things about it on a number of fronts in terms of the networking opportunities, just that everyone's there, blah, blah, blah. So I'm interested in checking it out, exploring that. And I'm already, you know, setting up meetings and just meetups and trying to figure out who's going to be there that I can connect with that I haven't seen in a while. So should be interesting, you know, an interesting experience for me as someone who doesn't particularly like these, you know, it's a big multi-track conference. And it's a lot of the Silicon Valley stuff, right, that doesn't necessarily jive with the way that we grow and build businesses. So it's going to be the assumption that everybody's raising funding, the assumption everybody wants to get to 100 million, the assumption that if you're not doing that, you're crazy, you know, that kind of stuff. So with that said, I mean, there's a lot of value still that can come out of, I really like Jason Lemkin's thinking. I respect his outlook and opinions on so many aspects of growing SaaS businesses. And there's a lot of folks who are going to be on stage that I think have a ton of knowledge and experience to lend to, you know, anyone starting a SaaS company. And I do like that it is focused. It's not just startups. I've been to some startup conferences where, you know, you're just standing amid the healthcare startups and there's the food startups and the drone startups and 3D printing startups. And as much as I like those things as a consumer, I have really no interest in doing any of them as an actual business. And so I find that it's less relevant, right? The more focused a conference can be, the more interested I am in it. And so that's it. So I'm going to be out in San Francisco for 4 or 5 days. Kind of getting it done.
Yeah, you'll have to let us know how it goes and see if we should multiply MicroConf by 100.
I know. It's just such a different conference, right? It's not better or worse. It's just a different way to approach an event. It's such a different way than MicroConf. And it should be interesting.
Well, I just realized how terrible I am at math, because it's not 100, it's 20, like 20.
Yeah, right. Because we have, 220, 230 at MicroConf? And if he's 5,000, yeah. So anyways, no, it'll be good. I'm genuinely looking forward to it. I love San Francisco. You know, I'm from about 30, 40 minutes east of San Francisco. So like the Bay Area is my town. San Francisco is my city. And so I love to get back there. And I will probably see, you know, at least parts of my family who can make it out to see me in the city. And so I don't want to sound like I'm not looking forward to it, because I very much am. I'm just a little bit skeptical, I guess, that, you know, how much value I want to be able to get out of an event that's that large. And so I'm excited to kind of go in, you know, with both feet and kind of see the rubber meet the road and see what I can get out of it.
You just mentioned how close some family and where you used to live in relation to San Francisco. I used to have a little joke in my back pocket where I would tell people I lived about an hour east of Boston just to see if they would catch on to the geography.
Well, yeah. Right. Because you're west. East is in the water.
Right.
Indeed.
So what are we talking about this week?
This week, we designed an entire episode around a listener question. And the question is from Johannes Akeson. He says, hi, Mike and Rob. Johannes from SQL Spreads at sqlspreads.com. One idea I have for a topic is the pros and cons of a local versus a remote team. I've been thinking a lot about this. So far, I've used mostly remote employees and only local subcontractors. I'm in the phase of growing my team, and I'm thinking a lot about this. Should I go for a complete remote team, a mix, or 100% local? I see pros and cons, both from the companies and from a personal viewpoint. With a remote team, you're more flexible to work from different places or from home. It can be more cost-effective and maybe easier to bring in part-time employees. With a local team, I see a lot of benefits like better collaboration, building a group of people, pushing each other, etc. Would be good to hear your experience in this area. So that's what we're diving into today. And I actually have a lot. I don't know that I had many opinions on this a couple years ago. I think it was kind of like, I'm building a lifestyle business. You know, this is 4 or 5 years ago. So everyone should always be remote. And this gives me the most of flexibility. And then as I dug into Drip and realized, boy, to really do this right, I actually think you do need people to be able to see each other face to face and not just once every 3 to 6 months at a kind of a company retreat or whatever. So we're going to dive in to the pros and cons of being remote versus local. And then I want to dig in and talk about the kind of the hybrid approach that we used with Drip that I think is by far better than remote or local. Ready to dig in?
Yeah. So let's get started. Why don't we cover remote first?
Yeah. So let's talk about a couple of the pros of having a remote team. I mean, the first and probably the biggest advantage to it is that you can hire the best people no matter the location. And so this relieves you from having to live near a bunch of good software developers and salespeople and customer success people and HR people. I mean, it means that you can basically look worldwide and probably find better people than you can in your locale.
I think there's another advantage here, which is also the cost of being able to hire people who kind of are at the skill levels that you need, and you don't necessarily have to pay local rates for them. So whether that means going overseas or just going to parts of your home country where it's on the outskirts, it's outside of a major city, and you don't need to basically outbid larger companies for the same level of talent. And if you can give people that freedom to work remotely, then it works well for them. And it also helps you because you don't have to pay as much for the people who are just as talented as you would get, assuming that you lived in a large city.
Yeah, it's a good point. And I think that's the second kind of advantage of going remote is that you don't have to pay the wages of, you know, a major city if that's where you live. And you still have the advantage of being able to get people on your team. You know, in essence, if you think about it, this is like arbitrage, right? It's like you might be able to live in a major city and then hire in a less expensive area. I've seen companies do it the other way, though, where they're in a really inexpensive area and then they're hiring out of San Francisco. And I was always thinking to myself, why would you do that? Like, I know there's good talent there, but that's not, you can find talent outside of the Silicon Valley, you know? So it was a really funny kind of almost reversal of how you shouldn't do this. They turned the pro of going remote into a con.
Yeah, that is odd. But I mean, sometimes, you know, depending on the talent that you're looking for, you may need to do that. You know, it just kind of depends on who you're looking for and where those people are located. So you can't always find the specific types of people that you're looking for in remote areas.
I think the third and final advantage of remote that we'll talk about briefly is this gives you as the founder a lot of freedom, right? You don't have to go into an office every day. You can kind of travel and it doesn't matter. It doesn't impact the business any more than if you were to be at home or wanted to work from a coffee shop or wanted to work from Europe for a month, aside from the time zone, no one's going to notice the difference. So it really gives you the most flexibility and I think kind of the most freedom as a founder if that's something that you're looking for.
I think there's actually another pro here, which is it gives freedom to the people that you're hiring. So that depending on what their circumstances are, they may want to, let's say that they already have a full-time job and they want to work part-time because they're, you know, saving for a wedding or they're trying to go on a trip next year or something along those lines. It gives them the flexibility to work a full-time job and then in addition, work on your things or be a consultant and work on your stuff part-time. And there's a lot of advantages to being able to hire somebody for part of their time, not necessarily all of their time. And that's obviously much more on a contractor basis or a limited basis, but a lot of times it's very difficult to build your business and then you happen to have like an extra $10,000 coming in every single month and you say, okay, now I can hire somebody. It doesn't usually work out out that way. You usually end up in a situation where you need some additional help and you might have a couple $1,000 extra a month, but it's obviously not enough to hire somebody full time. So you have to decide, am I going to hire somebody part time, or I'm going to hire in advance of the revenue in anticipation of that? And that's obviously a little bit dangerous, but you know, it gives those people some flexibility as well.
Yep, that's a good point. Let's talk about the negatives, say the cons of hiring remote. I think the first one and the one that I noticed the most when we were remote and then when we kind of switched to a more localized approach is that it's hard to collaborate, period. Like even with the software and webcams and all the cool technology, the Slack, all that stuff, the digital whiteboards, it's just harder to collaborate. There's nothing better than being able to look face-to-face, especially on the really hard problems where like it'll take you 3, 4, 5 hours of kind of going back and forth and discussion and these hardcore meetings and these chance encounters and overhearing a discussion. Like those things just aren't replicated the same way when you're remote.
Yeah, it's hard to put your finger on exactly what the problem here is, because if you could, then it would be a lot easier to say, okay, well, let's solve this in this particular way. But there's a lot of subtleties here to that collaboration problem, which are not easily pinpointed. I mean, you talked about some of them where, you know, the digital whiteboard and the Skype and headsets and cameras and stuff like that. And it helps to some extent, but I don't think that it's quite the same. You don't get the same feel working remotely with somebody as you do if you're working, you know, 5 feet away from them, or, you know, even 25 feet away, you know, in a larger office space. It's not quite the same feeling when you're trying to collaborate on particular problems. And it's also hard to get on a Skype call for several hours, to be honest. I mean, it's difficult to maintain your focus on a particular problem because there's usually so many other things going on and you're at your computer. So naturally there are other distractions that will come up, like email. And if you were just at a whiteboard, for example, then there's no pop-ups coming up. There's no additional notifications. There's no other people pinging you on Skype or Slack or anything. So you can kind of get away from that if you're physically located next to each other, but you can't do that when you're collaborating over a computer.
Yeah, I believe that hands down, you will build a better product and you will solve problems faster and better if you're all in the same location. I just don't think there's any way to argue with that. Now, there are other pros and cons of both of these, but that one, it has just become ingrained in my mind over and over and over in terms of being able to collaborate with people. And this is not something you can schedule. You can't say, well, every quarter we'll get through and then we'll get together and we'll plan the next 90 days, or every month we'll get together for 2 days. And it isn't the same. It's not the same as being able to interact and collaborate on a day-to-day basis as needed on an ad hoc basis, where you're hammering out a bunch of stuff, especially in a startup with as frequently as things change. I can imagine being in a Fortune 500 where you have this waterfall approach and you probably could plan out months at a time and they move so slowly that there's no need for those ongoing conversations. But you know, when you're remote, it makes it harder. I think the second con or negative of remote is this, it's a subtle thing, but it's like this lack of camaraderie, a lack of team unity. And I know you can get together again, you can get together every 3 to 6 months and all hang out in a house, and it's really cool. And the buzz you feel from that, it does carry over, you know, for the next week or two, but you'll notice that it fades, and that being together every day, like where we were in Fresno with the Drip team, it really was like that kind of all the time. It's weird to say, but we went out to lunch once a week. That was staff meeting. We hung out outside of work because we liked working together so much. You know, we developed friendships, and there was just this thing of like everyone being on board with the mission of the company and like doing the best for the team. And it meant there was just a lot of cohesiveness in our thought and a lot of kind of unity and everyone trying to help each other out a lot and getting things done very quickly, going out of our way to help each other in a way that when you're remote, yeah, you're totally, you know, your friends, your colleagues, you're cordial. But again, there's that unspoken, that thing that you just can't quite get when you're not around folks in person every day.
The next thing is a little bit country specific, and this pertains specifically to the United States. But if you have people that are located in multiple states, then you are considered to have what's called a tax nexus. And a nexus is essentially every place where you have an employee working for you, you are considered to have a nexus there, and you are supposed to be collecting taxes from people who order your software in those locations. Now, there's a lot of subtleties here that go on with, you know, that you have to deal with in terms of whether or not you're offering software as a subscription or it's a downloadable product. But that said, it complicates the issue when you have contractors and employees working working in different locations, whether it's in your country or in foreign countries. And sometimes these tax nexus can be established even if you just have an employee who's working in another country, for example, and then you are then subject potentially to collecting taxes for people who order your software in that country. So it's just, it becomes a complicated headache to some extent. And governments certainly don't make this any easier. It's they want their money, to be perfectly honest. But, you know, they don't really consider the ramifications for much smaller businesses or ones that operate entirely online, because, quite frankly, that's not really their concern. Their concern is the retailers. And they've never really quite caught up with the times in terms of being able to make it an easy way for you to collect taxes based on sales over the internet.
Yeah, this is something that most people don't talk about, but if you just start hiring people randomly, especially in the U.S., if you hire 10 people across 10 states, your tax nexus becomes very large and it becomes very complicated. It's not just the amount of money you're paying, it's a tremendous accounting headache just to track all of that. So really be careful before hiring new employees in just any kind of random state, because it will get complicated on you quick. The fourth negative is also relates to this, is the additional administration time for every state that you run payroll in. I know that with Paychex, as I even tried to add states, it was a nightmare. With Gusto, it was a little easier, but I still had to go out, or someone on my team had to go out and get there's the unemployment number from like the state, which is some random website, and then there was the disability number, and then there was the actual, like, I forget what the other one, like state income tax number. I mean, there's all these numbers, and each of them took 30 to 40 minutes of filling stuff out just to get some type of approval, and then it took 3 weeks to get it, and then I couldn't run payroll while we were waiting on that, and it was just this whole like project that I wasn't counting on. And so as you add states, count on 4 to 8 hours of just killed admin time right at the start, and then plan on dealing with a bunch of kind of bureaucracy in essence, because then they screwed one of them up and it didn't work, you know. And it's just, again, it's just one more thing that really isn't moving your business forward. And it sounds like a small thing of like, oh, I'll just kill a day doing that, but it's a lot more of a pain in the butt than I think that you realize. And then every time you run payroll, now you're paying all these multiple states. Gusto does that for you, but anytime there's confusion or a dispute or whatever, it's more manual interaction that you're dealing with. And so it's just that added accounting complexity.
I was going to point out that, like, every time something goes wrong, which it inevitably will, it chews through several more hours of your time. So even if you, let's say that you chew through 4 to 8 hours just setting things up, and then you have to wait for 3 weeks for things to go through with the state, they might not have been correct, or they may have left out something. I remember having to go just to the Department of Motor Vehicles here in Massachusetts to get my license when I transferred it over. I ended up going back 4 times because they said, oh, you just need this and this. And I'd go back and they'd say, oh, you need this other thing. I'm like, well, why didn't you tell me that last time I was here? And finally, by the 3rd time, I just said, is there anything else I need? Is there a list of everything that I need? And they said, oh, yeah, here it is. And there were like 2 other things that they didn't tell me about. And it's the exact same thing when you're trying to pay payroll taxes, because there's all these things that they're not going to tell you about. And every single state has a different mechanism for getting all that stuff done. And some of them require certain things, some of them don't. And it's just a mess. And like you said, any little thing goes wrong, or if one state changes rules a little bit or requires a sign off or a signature or a new piece of paperwork filed, sometimes it's quarterly, sometimes it's annual, they expect you to know what those things are, and they won't tell you in advance. There's no mailing list or whatever you can sign up for that says, hey, here's all the things that you need to know about running a business in such and such state. None of them do that. So it is it's kind of a fighting against the machine at that point. It's just awful.
Yep, I've run into it. Another negative of remote is that it does take a unique employee to make it work. Not everyone is able to work remotely for sustained periods. A, it can be isolating, even when you're working, you know, remotely with a team. B, folks get distracted, and especially over long periods of time. Like, you hire somebody 6 months, they'll be good. A year, they'll be good. 2-3 years into it, a lot of people really run into challenges of just being able to stay focused, stay motivated without folks around them, because it's the norm to be in an office, you know, as sad as that might be, or as, you know, disturbing as that might be, that's how we've done it for the past 80 years since offices, you know, were invented, or 100 years or whatever. And so people are used to having that, you know, that interaction with other folks. And as a result, I've known founders who have hired people and they've worked out really well on the technical side, but they haven't been able to be productive and to really, you know, produce long-term, you know, as a remote employee in essence.
And I think part of that goes back to, you know, what you'd said before about one of the cons being a lack of unity. And it's just that comfortability that you get, the socialness of working with other people, because as you said, working remotely is very isolating. And if you don't have a mechanism in place or a system in place for getting out, whether that's you or the people who are working for you, then it can be very easy to fall into this trap where, you know, you basically fire up your laptop every day and you work for 8 hours and you don't leave the house for days or weeks on end. And that's, you know, long term, that's going to be detrimental. And that's part of why offices work so well, is because you get that social aspect that as humans, we kind of need that, whether that is social engagement at work or outside of work. But if you don't leave the house to go to work, then it, you know, isolates you that much more, especially if you're sitting there for long hours working on code or different things and you're not really talking to a lot of people. It can be very difficult, both for the founder and for the people who are working for them.
And then the last couple cons for going remote or having a remote team. The first is time zone complexities, and this depends on how remote you are. But, you know, if you hire someone in Europe or in Asia and you're in the States, you're talking 9 to 12 hours difference if you're on Pacific time versus Asia. I think it's even 14 hours difference. And that becomes kind of a pain in the butt, you know, when you have this day or 2 day delay because everything's asynchronous. And so if you're hiring, you know, we're trying to hire within 3 time zones, 3 hours difference of Pacific when we were in Fresno. And I felt like that was a pretty good way to manage it. I think trying to do it in 8 or 9 hours off really even reduces even more of the ability to collaborate and the team unity and that kind of stuff. So depending on how you arrange it, this may or may not be a major con for you. And lastly, this kind of plays into, you know, needing unique employees or unique team members to be able to pull it off. But unless you're on top of things, some people will naturally start to slack off. It may not happen in the first week, may not happen in the first month, but over time, things will come up. And they realize that they don't need to necessarily clock in and clock out, because I imagine, you know, you're not running a startup like that. And I think that you can see people start to become less and less productive over time, unless you do hire people that are really able to stay focused, or there's some other thing that's motivating them. Because if they look at it as a job, there's always something else that they can be doing, right? I mean, they really need to be bought into whether it's working with the team or whether it's the vision that you have or whether it's loyalty to you. Because if you don't have that, people will inevitably, you know, try to find ways to basically not put in the full-time work.
Yeah, and I don't think that's necessarily intentional. It's just a matter of how things tend to work out in terms of the workloads and the ways that people put time in. So, I mean, if you're working remotely, it's very easy to get up a little bit later and then call it a day early, for example. And you don't think very much of it because sometimes you're just thinking about things after work, or you kind of start including that extra time. And, you know, it's difficult to track it as well. And most of the time, the founder has got other things going on that they're not going to track that. And for them, their sole focus is working on the business and trying to get things up and running. And quite frankly, micromanaging employees or contractors is not at the top of the priority list. You don't want to have to do that. So this can be a problem longer term. I think in the early days, it's much easier to, and by early days, like early on, with working with somebody, you tend to not see this very much, but as time goes on, it can become a problem. And then it becomes difficult to address because you don't have the clarity of when, you know, they're working in the office. And not that them being in the office equates to productive time, but it's difficult to judge how much people are actually working or how much time people are putting in.
Yeah, I like that thought. I agree with you. The sentiment is that most people won't do this intentionally, but it can happen pretty easily unintentionally.
Yeah. And then it becomes uncomfortable to bring up.
Right, right. Yeah, and that's the thing, you know, if you're going to build an organization and you're like, boy, we're a startup and we're going to be cranking on this for a good solid 2 years, and then we're going to sell, or then we're going to IPO or whatever it is, then a lot of these things don't matter, right? These are longer term things that if you want to build a business that's sustainable and that is actually generating revenue and you're thinking out 2, 3, 4, 5 years, some of these things will creep in. And these are not often talked about because so many of the startups that we see, remote workers and how all that works, they just haven't been around that long. There are a few, there are a couple, like Basecamp comes to mind and Buffer, but most of the big high profile ones, or even just the ones that we hear about in our circles, these are like 1 and 2 year old companies. And there's a lot of stuff that's going to creep in after that. So let's switch over to talking about local and just doing the traditional, you know, having an office, you hire everybody in the same locale. When I say everybody, I mean almost everybody. Sometimes there's a really specific position that you may need to hire remote for, but it, you know, imagine it's like someone who's kind of an independent contributor and they don't need to work with the rest of the team on a day-to-day basis. So I'm saying mostly local here. The pros to this are mostly, you know, the opposites, kind of the cons of being remote is the ability to collaborate, look eye to eye, work on hard problems, the camaraderie and the unity of being able to go out to lunch with people, of being able to be in the room and have conversations and plan things. And number three, I found that that all builds into the team basically being more invested in the business outcome or in the outcome of the startup than if you were to build a completely remote team. I do think there are ways to work around these and to, you know, even if you are remote, to try to get as much benefit as you can from these. But I don't see that there's any way that if you're remote that you can possibly, you know, nail these three as good as being local in the same office.
I think some of that has to do with the fact that you're not getting the feedback from the business or the founder when you are working remote. So, for example, if you added some code to the product that really made a difference for a particular piece of it, and you work in the same office, it's much easier and probably much more common for somebody to say, hey, great job doing that, or, you know, I really appreciate that you did that, versus if you're remote, then those people have to make it a point to kind of go out of their way to provide that feedback to the people who are working remotely. So, it's as you said, it's not that it can't be done. It's just that it's more difficult and you have to put forth a conscious effort to do it. In those cases, it's more likely to get swept under the rug or just not addressed, or you're not giving that feedback to people because you've got other things that you're thinking about that are probably overtaking a lot of the other things that come to mind, including that feedback loop to the people who are working on stuff.
Right. And of course, you can do this in Slack or you can do it via email or something, but it doesn't have the same impact as looking someone in the eye and in front of everybody else being like, you totally rock this. Nice job. Something we, you know, did at Drip when we were coming up, and we still do, is we have stuff we call launch juice. It's a fire cider, right? So it's a non-alcoholic, very strong. I think it's like habanero and honey, and it's apple cider vinegar. And we do a shot of that when we do a big launch of anything. So major features. I mean, so maybe we'll do a shot, you know, once every month or two. And that's just a really cool thing that you technically could ship bottles and shot glasses out to everybody, and then all get together on video, Skype, and then, you know, do it together. But there's just something about being in that room, pouring them and being like, cheers, team, we totally rock this, and doing it together that you just can't quite get with a remote team. All right, so let's talk about some of the drawbacks of being local. I mean, the first one is that it can be really expensive, right? That you can have higher salaries, especially if you live in a major city. The second is the talent pool may be thin if you don't live in a major city. I mean, if you need to hire six developers and several support people, you know, over the course of a year or two as you're growing, if you don't live in a major city, that's actually a lot harder than it sounds to find people who can all make it to the same office that are of the quality that you'll want. And I think the third one that comes to mind is just the expense, right? The expense of having an office and of, you know, of kind of having to manage all that. And maybe there's even that admin cost of kind of having to find that and sign a lease and the commitment and how all that shakes out. Again, referring back to my experience with Drip, we were in a good position that we were able to find really inexpensive office space in a little local tech hub called Bitwise Industries in downtown Fresno. It's a revitalized warehouse building in essence. And so our lease term was not very long. Our lease cost was exceptionally low compared to friends and other founder friends who I talked to. But I think even starting in co-working, I would have done a co-working space, right? And just kind of rented out more and more desks or rented out more and more office space rather than sign some big 3 to 5 year lease. Cause I just, that would never have felt comfortable to me. But this is definitely, it's just another thing that you have to think about if you're going to be local, that's not even on your radar if you're going to be remote.
The other thing is that you have probably a lot more competition for the types of people that you're looking for. So, I mean, even if you are in a smaller area, like the pickings are thin in terms of trying to find those employees or you know, local workers. But at the same time, you're also competing against other companies that have open job listings. I remember when I had an office over in Hudson, Massachusetts here, because we were in the same region as Monster.com, like all of our job listings that went out to Monster.com inevitably got pushed down by, quite frankly, them and several other large companies that were in the area. And it was very difficult to get noticed by people people who were out there actually looking for jobs. And then once you you did get noticed, you tended to get a lot of people coming in from the recruiters saying, hey, let me try and help you fill this position, which, you know, just drastically increases the cost for that position to just find somebody. So there's a lot of things that go into it that just increase the costs overall. And, you know, the other thing I'd probably mention here is that you'll find that there's probably less flexibility for the people who are coming into your office and saying, yeah, I'll come in for a couple of hours to actually do an interview. And those people are looking for the type of 9-to-5 job that they're willing to come in the door and spend the 8 hours there and then go home at the end of the day, versus the types of people that are looking for a remote position. Maybe they're looking for it because they can only work a couple of hours in the morning and then a couple of hours in the evening. And the scheduling flexibility that those people are looking for is different than the type of scheduling that the people who are local are looking for.
Yeah, I think that's actually a really good point. Something I left out with another pro of going remote is that people look at being able to work remote as a big perk. And so you may be able to find people who think differently about work, or just who are more willing to come work for you and wouldn't necessarily. There'd be too much competition if they were only local. And so that remote ability allows you to basically land folks who you otherwise wouldn't be able to. Cool. So I think those are kind of the pros and cons as we see them. The approach that I want to lay out that we stumbled upon with Drip was this hybrid approach, and where we spent about 50%, 40 to 50% of our time in the office, and then the remainder, the other 50 to 60% remote. And by remote, I just mean we work from home or from coffee shops, but we found that it was crazy in terms of our ability to collaborate. So we would all come in on, let's say, Tuesdays and Thursdays. And so we had all the touch points. We had the unity because we did the lunches. We had the camaraderie. The team was invested in the business outcome. We were all in one state. You know, we kind of, it's like the Goldilocks zone is what we found. And it eliminates the time zone complexities, the tax complexities, and it allowed us to solve really hard problems when we needed to on a recurring basis. But we also were able to go home and do maker time. And that was a big deal, right? For developers, especially, to be able to go home 2 to 3 days a week. It was 2.5 to 3 days a week, depending on what they wanted to do, and be able to basically be on their own. And of course, we were all communicating via Slack and stuff, but it really helped them get stuff done on the days they weren't in the office, and then to use the office days as the days to have the interpersonal and the collaboration time. And I think that if I were ever, you know, going to grow another business, which presently I have absolutely zero plans of ever doing it again, but if that were ever the case, I would strive really hard for this in between, this hybrid approach of having people that are local enough that a couple days a week together is a possibility.
I think with the hybrid approach, you're kind of trading certain cons for pros in some situations, and then trading certain pros for cons in other situations. So, for example, if you have that situation where you're coming into the office a couple of days a week, yes, you get the pros of being able to collaborate with people and getting the team unity and lots of other things that you wouldn't get for a remote team. But then you're also accepting the responsibility that, hey, you still need to hire people who are reasonably remote. You can't just expect them to kind of commute for 4 or 5 hours or whatever. So you've still somewhat limited yourself in terms of the geographic region that you're hiring in. But there are a lot of benefits to what you said, that hybrid approach. And, you know, some of it has to do with concentration and being able to just take a couple of days and focus on the problems and then revisit it and come back to a physical meeting place where everybody's working together and get all that camaraderie that we previously talked about.
And I got to be honest, I think kind of before really building the team at Drip and, you know, at our peak, or I shouldn't say at our peak because we're actually higher than that now in terms of employee count. But when we were acquired, we were at about 10 people and there were 2 contractors, 8 employees, and 5 of us were there in Fresno and 5 were remote. But before growing that team, I hadn't realized the value of this collaboration and kind of the camaraderie / team unity piece. But it became very apparent to me as we grew the team that, you know, the value of those things. And that's why I think we landed on the whole hybrid approach.
Well, Johannes, I hope that answers your question. If you have a question for us, you can call it into our voicemail number at 1-888-801-9690 or email it to us at questions@startupsthestrestofus.com. Our theme music is an excerpt for We're Out of Control by Moot, used under Creative Commons. Subscribe to us on iTunes by searching for Startups and visit startupsthestrestofus.com for a full transcript of each episode. Thanks for listening, and we'll see you next time.